Well, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Boy, do we have a show for you today. First half of it, we're going to be talking with Deborah Roth. She is a very well-known federal employment attorney in the Washington area. And then at 10:30, we're going to switch over and talk with OPM Director Catherine Archuleta. So stick around for this. And then after this show, we'll be having a web chat with the OPM Director starting at 11. Deborah Roth is very well-known in Washington, official Washington circles. Deborah, are you with us?
I am. Thank you.
Hey, I want to use the word scandal here, but there, as my grandson would do, I put air quotes around it.
So do I.
There are scandals and there are scandals. But we've had scandal after scandal. You know, the GSA, the rumble in the desert, the Secret Service agents, couple of incidents there, the IRS allegedly targeting conservative groups, and now allegations about cooking the books at the Department of Veterans Affairs. You've been there, done that, got the T-shirt. I know you've worked in some of these cases.
We have.
Where are we with this thing?
Well, where we are is that it just keeps ratcheting up. And when you look at sort of the linear exercise that we've been through as Congress, you know, reacts and the media reacts to each one of these quote-unquote scandals, I'm with your grandson, you know, the pressure on the federal workforce just gets ratcheted up as the, you know, sacrificial lamb. And I've been out there saying that now for quite a while, that it's the easiest target. And the best target now has become senior executives because you can pass them off to the public as a very high-level government official, highly paid, and it looks like, you know, quote-unquote, heads are rolling. And federal employees have become very easy targets. They don't have a pulpit. They can't. You know, they cannot go out to the press unless, you know, they're going to try to achieve whistleblower status. But they can't go out to the press and respond to the accusations in the media or from Congress on their own. They just can't do that. They're federal employees. They have to go through public affairs. And public affairs and the administration has been, in my opinion, and I think the opinion of much of the federal workforce, has been eager to allow federal employees to become the scapegoat. And the VA scandal is a great example. The idea that the issue with the electronic wait list or the wait list issues out in Phoenix is a bunch of federal employees covering up, you know, just in this sort of very micro setting, some issue with the wait list is absurd. It's just absurd. If you follow the electronic wait list issue, it's been going on for years. And it's been VHA-wide, and GAO has studied it, and the IG has issued reports about problems in other hospitals with the electronic wait list. And so, you know, it's easy to ignore it. If you're policymakers, it's too difficult to wrap your hands around. But when something explodes like this, it's very easy to pick on the federal workforce. And that's been the playbook now for the last couple of years, and I don't really see it changing.
Well, has Congress been generous enough with the VA, or do they give them usually what they ask for?
You know, Mike, I tried to look into that, and we found some congressional research numbers on budget, and from, you know, you look at 2000 right before the war,
right,
to 2012, I think the last published is 2012, but you can find 2014, and they are, but I did read that they're, I don't know if they're getting what the administration's asked for, but when I look at the numbers, I think, if I'm reading it correctly, the appropriations has, you know, quadrupled. But when you read other people talking about congressional appropriations, including appropriators, what you start to see is a concern that because of budget austerity by the far extreme parts of the Republican Party, that there's a concern that the administration has not asked for everything it needed to deal with the, you know, somewhere between 1.5 and 2 million new veterans returning from war joining the VHA system. And so, you know, it's hard to know whether they're getting what they need because now lawmakers, some lawmakers, are opining, well, maybe they didn't ask for everything they need because of austerity issues and sequestration.
Well, you know, the numbers are mind-boggling, and of course, and everybody's getting older. You know, that's a given. People say that. But in World War II, we had something like 14 million men and women under arms. Now, those people now are in their late 80s and their 90s. And in the Memorial Day parade, I was thrilled to see one of Jimmy Doolittle's raiders over Japan in April 1942. He was one of the honorary marshals. He's 91. The World War II guys and women are extremely old. The Korea people are in their 80s. The Vietnam veterans are in their 60s now. And so we have that problem. And it's not just the younger people coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, but it's these older people who have age-related ailments.
Yeah, and you know, you can read lots of different news reports, but everybody says it's a confluence of the aging population of veterans of previous wars, along with the introduction of 1.5 to 2 million new veterans returning from Afghanistan and Iraq. You know, what's interesting, one of the things that's interesting to me is, of course, there's all this discussion out there about giving them access to private health care with like a credit card system. The whistleblower in this case, Dr. Foote out of Arizona, who's now retired, he did an op-ed piece for the New York Times, I guess it was last week, and one of the things that he said that, you know, he thinks is driving, I think he agrees, is the quantity of people seeking access into the VHA system they just haven't been able to keep pace with. And one of the suggestions he had was to go back to, which I can't imagine our lawmakers would be go back to providing care only for service-connected disabilities and injuries. And, of course, that would relieve an enormous amount of pressure on the system.
Yeah, that's putting the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just not likely to happen. We've gotten to a point where, you know, people want their benefits. And the system, I think there's eventually going to be a very widely held belief that the VHA system doesn't have the infrastructure in place. And that's not just buildings and physicians. It's things like the electronic wait list, which when you read GAO previous reports, which Congress certainly had access to, VHA was very slow to dealing with the wait list issue at a national level. And so this business of heads should roll and let's focus on the medical center director at Phoenix because she supposedly knew about a secret list to skew the stats so she could get a bonus, it feels a bit absurd, that allegation. It feels like there's got to be a whole lot more. Things are generally in this town not what they appear to be on the surface. And what's become in the last few years is the media loves these scandals. Congress loves being able to pick on the administration to judgment.
You know, it's interesting you'd say that because I was thinking about the air quotes, the GSA scandal. But I mean, that was scintillating stuff, you know, romping in the desert, Las Vegas. Uh-huh. It had everything.
Cocktails
going
in your
for
hot
it.
Tub.
Prizes for people, bonuses. And then it turned out a year later, 2 years later, weren't some of those people reinstated?
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, Mike, you know that we had one of the four senior executives who was fired in connection. Well, three were fired, one retired. Jeff Neely, who was the senior executive whose region hosted the conference and whose region was responsible for all of the contracting that the IG, took issue with, and rightfully so. I mean, there were serious procurement improprieties. And violations of GSA's own travel regs. But so he retired. But the other three senior executives whose regions participated in this conference were fired too, and very quickly. Within like 2 or 3 weeks of the news breaking on the air quote scandal, they had their proposed removals. Two of those executives, and they were fired. Two of those executives appealed the removals to MSPB and got different judges in different regional MSPB offices. And both judges in both cases said that GSA failed to sustain the charges of misconduct, neglect of duty against these executives. Now, GSA's appealed both of these decisions, and so we're waiting to see how the board will rule, but the initial take at MSPB was no evidence.
Outstanding, and this happens all the time. Need to take a short break here, talking with Deborah Roth, Washington, a federal employee benefits attorney. We'll be right back.
What is program evaluation? What can be done to better integrate evidence and rigorous evaluation in decision-making? How can federal agencies conduct rigorous program evaluations and data analytics on a tight budget? How can federal agencies increase and enhance their evaluation capacity? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Kathy Stack, Advisor for Evidence-Based Innovation, Office of Management and Budget. Tune in Mondays at 11 a.m. for the Business of Government Hour on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis, Foodie and the Beast, and we want you to join us at Great Taste of Tyson's on Saturday, May 31st.
Join us at 3 p.m. for a live blind beer tasting with the pros. Everybody gets a sip of beer and everybody gets to decide what kind it is. We'll be with DC Brow, Three Star Brewery, and Teddy Folkman.
Can't join us? We're recording the show and you're going to hear it Sunday, June 1st at 11 a.m. right here on 1500 a.m.
Here's Shishu Gupta, Deputy CIO, NGA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Cloud Computing, sponsored by DLT Solutions.
The other thing that NGA is really more interested in is this immersive experience, that three-dimensional immersive experience where analysts can move around in the data more interactively without a mouse is really where we think we can go in cloud computing because of the scalability and ability to bring lots of compute power to data.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to Federal News Radio.
Navigate your journey to the cloud today with DLT Solutions. With its in-house team of engineers and architects, DLT has the knowledge and expertise needed to architect, deliver, manage, and support a cloud environment that fits your agency's unique needs. From secure application hosting and scalable storage to application development and disaster recovery, you can lower costs and improve efficiency across your environment with DLT. Forge ahead into the cloud, simply, smartly, and cost-effectively. Learn more at dlt.com/cloud services.
Our active duty military veterans and military families are incredibly brave for what they have done and continue to do for our country. Train, a leading manufacturer of heating and air conditioning products and systems, supports our troops, our veterans, and their families at home, waiting for those brave soldiers to return. Your local Train distributor will donate a portion of this season's profits to a worthy military charity. Visit trainsearch.com to learn more and to locate an independent Train Comfort Specialist dealer that offers discounts for our military heroes and their families in your area.
Attend a free educational event June 3rd at the Washington, D.C. Convention Center designed to bring together the federal chief financial officer and chief information officer communities and explore the importance of this relationship. The discussion will focus on how the CIO and CFO communities are collaborating to create an agenda, recruiting and retaining the right workforce, and innovating in an era of declining budgets. This event is sponsored by AGA and Affirm. For more information, visit agacgfm.org/CIOCFO_summit.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Deborah Roth. She is a Washington-based federal employed law attorney. Deborah, I was thinking that even despite your tender years, you probably have more experience practicing this sort of thing than anybody in the business right now.
Yeah, no, I'm with the law firm 24 and a half years, and it's only, you know, it's a single focus is to represent federal employees, and a big part of the practice is representing senior executives. And so, you know, I like to think that we've represented a federal official, you know, in every one of the scandals that even precede our current times. You know, we go back to representing ATF officials in congressional hearings after Waco, FBI official after Ruby Ridge. And so, you know, you can sort of see, and Mike, it's interesting you say that because we were talking about that just last week here in the law firm, and somebody asked me, you know, is it different today than it was, you know, 20 years mm-hmm. ago? I don't even remember how long. It was at least 15 years ago, Ruby Ridge and Waco. They were on the heels of each other. And It's significantly different. And you attribute it to the age of instant information and a very hungry media news cycle and a very on-camera shy group of lawmakers who like getting in front of the cameras and making sound bites. And the American attention span has really diminished because of this. And so, you know, that's why everything's instant. Instant news, instant results, instant action. And I thought it was very interesting that Secretary Shinseki and the president were both really criticized for doing what, you know, good democracies do best, which is sort of to get to the bottom of it. Like, let's wait and see. And they got criticized for that. And, you know, there have been several lawmakers who have spoken out against this fast-tracking of judgment and, you know, taking action. And I'm sure, Mike, you're aware that one of the things that that lawmakers are now proposing to, you know, grab hold and get accountability of the waitlist issue at the VA is to reform the SCS system and either take away, make them at-will employees that serve at the pleasure of the political arm of the government, or severely shorten their time to, you know, appeal and deal with charges brought against them. And, you know, essentially that's eliminating something that's very fundamental to the American system, which is due process. And Americans, you know, believe that everyone's entitled to some amount of process when the government takes action. And that message, you know, is being controlled. The sound waves are now controlled by a very hysterical arm of politicians who just want to, you know, make it look like they've done something at the VA. But taking away their appeal rights, how's that going to fix the electronic waitlist system? Yeah. How's that going to happen?
Well, making them at-will employees, too, you're instantly creating a class of 7,000 or 8,000 new political appointees for each administration to take it. You said something interesting about the 24/7 news cycle, and I was the day of the Newtown shooting in Connecticut. Mm. I happened to be with two police officers and a federal official who's now retired. We were watching this unfold. I won't say the name of the cable network, but we were watching this unfold, and we're sitting there now with two professional cops, myself, a journalist, and a very smart federal official. And we noted that every single fact they reported was wrong. They didn't get one thing right.
But you know what's become media, you know, and even some very major news sources reporting on the VA scandal. We are representing VA officials in connection with this quote-unquote scandal and investigation, and so we have some inside baseball. We know some things that isn't reported. And then you read in, you know, very, you know, well-respected news sources information that's just, like, not accurate. And you're like, well, what's become of news reporting? It's so sensationalized, even, you know, in mainstream, even mainstream news reporting has become so sensationalized. And sped up, and you know it reminds me of that book, The Tipping Point. You know, at what point does the American public say, stop, let's take a breath, and let's really think about what the problem is, whatever it is. It was the IRS scandal. It's, you know, training federal employees at GSA. Here it's the VA wait list. And what is the real problem? What is the real solution? And I fear that we're just, you know, we're not there yet at the tipping point, and that there will be more federal employees, quote unquote, whose heads roll, and there will be a degradation of the merit system. And we've decided that our democracy isn't based upon a government that's patronage, that's a partisan set of bureaucrats. So at what point do we get there? I don't think we're there yet. I don't think the VA scandal got us there. But if you read a lot of commentators and observers, that's what they're concerned about.
Yeah, well, the party in power always believes it will use the system perfectly and well, and then you do have a return to the spoil system. Now, you know, to your other question about the solution to this, A, who knows? Certainly I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better,
yeah.
If it does get better. And again, with that the Newtown reporting, a lot of that was fed by Twitter. And a reporter would see on his Twitter account that there was the brother of the shooter was in the woods. And they reported that when, in fact, he was at his home in New Jersey, not in the woods in Connecticut. And a lot of these things get reported that way. And I know the fear in the news business mm-hmm. has always been to be scooped. But in the case of 24/7, it's very easy to scoop somebody by 30 or 40 seconds, and it makes it mm-hmm. even easier to get it wrong.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then there's the pressure, there's the outcry, and you know, government wants to jump into the mix and do something. And, you know, it's really hard. I say this to clients. Once the government acts, it's really, particularly the federal government,
yeah.
Once they act, it's really hard to undo it. The time to, you know, the time to affect the outcome of how the government will act is in the decision-making process. If you don't have access, and that's what a democracy is founded on. If you don't have access to the decision makers in your government while decisions are being formulated, then your ability to change the outcome at the end is very limited. And with this news cycle that's just so hungry for sensationalized, you know, news, it encourages. There's this vicious cycle now between lawmakers and, you know, First Amendmenters, the media, the press. There's this vicious cycle between reporting and acting and getting in front of the cameras and looking strong and looking like you're beating down, you know, the negligent, derelict federal workforce. And you know, like I said, they're easy targets. They can't join the news cycle. No one's ever sort of taken that angle, like, why are we not hearing from these federal workers who are being accused of these crazy misdeeds?
Well, we've had one VA official, quote, resign, but in fact he was due to retire and had planned to retire anyhow. So is he lucky to be the only one that goes under the bus?
I don't think that. I think that's not going to happen at all. I think if you watch, you know, if you look at GSA, well, and, you know, you left out a scandal. You left out Fast and Furious at ATF.
Yeah.
And if you look at those recent sort of clump of scandals, many more, quote unquote, heads rolled, and then
yeah.
Congress walks away, you know, you can sort of see them with saliva dripping out of their mouth that they've done their job. And it's like, you know, what you've done is come in and wreaked havoc and use the federal workforce for a partisan battle. It's not clear in many of those agencies, if you go back and you talk to the federal employees, at all levels.
Well, excuse me, that image of drooling congressman is enough for me, Deborah. We have to take a break here, but look, we're definitely going to have you back for the full hour. Thank you so much for being with us, Deborah Roth. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking with OPM Director Catherine Archuleta after a break here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Roger Baker, Chief Strategy Officer at Agilex, on the value of health IT panel discussion sponsored by HIMSS.
Today, that kind of change can be driven by people going into health IT. You know, the next big breakthroughs are going to come through as a combination of the science and the information helping guide where the opportunities are, and the science then honing directly into how do we make that happen.
To hear the full conversation, visit federalnewsradio.com.
Attention healthcare policy leaders, IT professionals, and providers. If you're challenged with managing technology, reimbursement models, and cost efficiencies, register for the 2014 Government Health IT Conference and Exhibition at hims.org/govhit. On June 17th and 18th, learn how organizations are achieving stability and improving patient care. Attendance is free for veterans and federal employees. Visit hims.org/govhit.
Tune in Thursday, May 29th at 10 a.m. for The Intersection, where technology meets transformation. Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller, VMware's Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive Doug Bourgeois, and Stu Flagel, Vice President of Carpathia Government Solutions, will discuss the case for hybrid clouds. Tune into the discussion and see what they have to say about the intersection of technology and transformation. Thursday, May 29th, 10 a.m., sponsored by VMware and Carahsoft.
Ankle sprains don't adhere to a 9-to-5 schedule. Sore throats, migraines, and chest pains don't take weekends off, and poison ivy isn't too proud to show up unannounced. For true emergencies, call 911. But there are lots of reasons to go to urgent care, and they can show up at the worst possible moment. That's why our members have 24/7 access to enhanced urgent care with board-certified emergency physicians on site at 5 of our 10 urgent care locations: Largo, Gaithersburg, Tyson's Corner, Capitol Hill, and in Baltimore County, just 4 miles south of downtown Baltimore. Add that to the convenience of having lab, pharmacy, x-ray, MRI, CT scans, and ultrasound all under the same roof, and then you've really got something. Not to mention the primary care you'll get at any of our 29 area medical centers throughout the Mid-Atlantic. Whether it's appointments in the middle of the day or urgent care way past midnight, we've got you covered. Learn more at kp.org. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
General Dynamics Information Technology, where cybersecurity is always part of the solution, start to finish. General Dynamics IT. To learn more, go to gdit.com/cyber.
Colonel Max Maxwell is the Strategic Initiatives Officer for the Army Judge Advocates General Corps.
As a hierarchical society that listens to orders and that understands that what makes a great team is the team itself, therefore, it is the commander who has the authority, but also is held accountable to making sure that we eradicate within our ranks sexual assault.
All of our series coverage, Trust Redefined, Reconnecting Government and Its Employees, at federalnewsradio.com. Search Trust.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and we're delighted to have the Director of the Office of Personnel Management, Catherine Archuleta, with us today. And then following our show, our live show, we're going to be doing a web chat at 11. So, Director, are you there?
Yes, I am
here. Hey, thank you so much for carving out so much time. I know, or I think I know how busy you are. I probably would be stunned to find out how busy you are, but we really appreciate you doing it. I have a totally off-the-wall question. It's an 80-degree day out there, and people will think I'm mad, but I knew John Berry when he worked on Capitol Hill, your predecessor.
Uh-huh.
He knew the government inside out. He loved it. He political scientist and all that. And when he was offered the job at OPM, he said the thing he dreaded most, and he wasn't kidding, was the snow days. Having to make that call, because it's so controversial, not only in Washington with people being Monday morning quarterbacks, but out of town for people who say we're wimps here in this city. And we had arguably the worst winter that certainly I can remember in the D.C. area, 2013-2014, maybe the worst in decades. It was even worse than our 33-inch snow year. And yet you seemed to come through it with flying colors. There were no major traffic jams, no deaths attributed to snow closing policy. We didn't have any of these mix-ups with calling people in and then sending them home. How'd you get it right?
Well, I have a great team that helps me all the time. We work with the National Weather Bureau, and then from there what we do is watch it the whole evening, and usually about 3 a.m. in the morning we get together once again with a number of different teams, a protocol that we've established for how we call, and then we make the decision. But it's a lot of information that one has to digest. In 2013, there was one snow day, and in 2014, I know I was on 13 different calls. So I think we had actually 4 or 5 actual having to shut down the offices here in the Washington metro area.
Well, congratulations. One thing I like, a lot of people away from Washington don't realize, is that this is a huge geographic area. The metro region runs from West Virginia to the Chesapeake Bay. A lot of different weather patterns, a lot of different land in there, and some of the counties around here are very rural, and the schools have issues with it too. So anyhow.
Well, what we were able to do is actually on one of the calls that we do is we have all of the metro areas agencies and departments really on the phone with us. So we're really talking to a number of different people. So we might have the transportation folks. We have different governments on the line. So we're looking at all of the indicators because the metro region is so big. It's not just taking a look what's happening at Washington, but as you mentioned, looking out around the entire region to see how easy it or difficult it'll be for the employees to get into the district.
Well, to be such a horrible winter, that part of it went very well. So, but many of us thank you. Hey, the big ticket question for a lot of people is phased retirement. You know, it's been in the pipeline a while. Congress approved it. It's an extremely complicated issue. It's not just a matter of saying, okay, you can take phased retirement, work 3 days a week, we'll see you. I know there are a lot of questions and issues, and I was wondering where it is now in the pipeline.
Well, the proposed rule is still under review, and generally how, if this rule is approved, is that employees who are eligible for retirement but want to stay in the same job could work half-time while getting half of their pension. And as they continue to work, these retirees would keep accruing additional service credit toward their final pensions. And while on the job, they would have to spend 20% of their time in mentoring activities, ideally with employees who will take over for them when they are completely retire. As I said, these regulations are under review right now, but I think they would create a system that promotes unique mentoring and expanded institutional knowledge. And we don't want to lose that knowledge as our leadership is retiring. So I think it offers a new and innovative alternative to traditional retirement.
A lot of people are predicting that when this goes into effect, that there will be a lot of interest in it. A lot of people will be leaving, and that could solve some agency budgetary problems and problems related to sequestration.
Well, I think it offers an opportunity, another toolbox for the department heads and managers to really look at their workforce and do their workforce planning.
President Obama said he wanted to make the government service cool again, and I know you and I talked about this previously, but to make it like it was, I assume he was referring to the Kennedy years, because I don't remember many times when it has been particularly cool. How do you do that, and is it happening?
You know, I think it isn't that government isn't cool, because I think it's pretty cool. I've been in government for most of my professional life, and I just think we need to do a better job of showing how that there are cool jobs and that they exist right now. And I think my job is to make sure that a lot of folks know more about what is cool about government. For example, let me give you some examples of jobs we have in government, like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. You know, a lot of folks have been hit by the economy. There was a lot of individuals who had issues around housing and other financial issues. And the Financial Protection Board is a pretty neat place because they're developing apps and guides to help families. In fact, they're even doing some apps and guides to help students and grads pay off their loans. And as I mentioned, for families to figure out how or what resources are available to help them facilitate their mortgage payments. You know, another one, this is close to home because I worked at the Department of Transportation. There are transportation safety specialist jobs at the National Transportation Safety Board that investigates accidents, whether it might be an aviation accident or a surface transportation accident, and to determine their causes. So it's sort of the forensic piece of that. And so I think that, you know, there really are cool jobs. I spoke to a young student in Texas just recently, and we talked about the fact that he was in medical school and what could he do. And I talked to him about, you know, have you thought maybe you could apply some of those skills to NASA? Because as we're thinking about where the next landing might be, they're going to need medical specialists to help them think through what the medical impacts are for any landing crews. So he said, wow, I could do that. I said, yeah. He says, that's really cool. So I think there's lots of cool jobs.
Yeah, well, if you go to any of these awards banquets and see what people have done, it is mind-boggling.
It is.
The I know you're particularly proud of the government's role in the Affordable Care Act, and although federal employees aren't covered by it because they have their own system, OPM and the government have a role, don't they?
Yes, we do the multi-state plans, and we've had a work very closely with DHS on the Affordable Care Act. I'm proud of the work that I was able to do in helping get information out to communities throughout the Southwest and other parts of the country during the sign-up period. And I got to see firsthand how important the Affordable Care Act can be to families who've lived without insurance. And so I'm excited about the work that OPM has done with multi-state. We were able to stand that up with no problems, and we continue to work very close with our partners at HHS.
And did I see somewhere, maybe it was in your blog, that you brought in almost 300,000 people, these are 300,000 or nearly, that didn't have insurance and now they do?
I think that's, you know, we've really worked hard to do that, yes. We've brought in we reached out through our multi-state programs. And so I think it's offered an alternative to many of the state programs as well, and we've been able to add in.
Okay. Director, we need to take a short break here. We'll be right back talking with Catherine Archuleta. She's Director of the Office of Personnel Management. Be right back here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Stephanie Rivera, Chief of Staff for GSA's Office of Government-Wide Policy on this month's Agency of the Month show, sponsored by Harris.
We're going in with the theory that there are all these data sets that are out there, and standalone data sets are fine. You know, you can look through an Excel spreadsheet, and you can do some sorting, and you can do some macros and some manipulations on it, but it's not that powerful. What's really powerful is when you start combining data sets.
To listen to the whole show, go to federalnewsradio.com.
Today's government professionals need secure, highly reliable network solutions that are cost-effective but at the same time remain adaptive to emerging technologies. As a leading provider of critical communications for government customers, Harris Corporation provides and supports all facets of such flexible next-generation networks. Even in the most remote and harsh locations, Harris delivers communications that are always on, anytime, anywhere. To learn more, visit harris.com/always-on. harris.com/always-on.
Nationals fans, catch all the play-by-play action with Charlie and Dave this season on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Or see the game in person with ticket prices starting at just $10. Visit nationals.com/tickets today.
Let someone else take the wheel and get a real deal. Join or form a new car pool and earn up to $130. A new van pool grabs a $200 monthly incentive. That's on top of the savings you get from ride sharing to begin with. Pool rewards. It pays to ride share. Visit commuterconnections.org or call 800-745-RIDE.
The United States Navy Band presents outdoor concerts every week all around the Capital Region. Monday nights at the U.S. Capitol, Tuesday nights at the Navy Memorial and Sylvan Theater, as well as venues in Maryland, D.C., Virginia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and more. Bring your family, enjoy great music, and support sailors deployed around the world around the clock. Visit us on the web to find out when the Navy Band is playing near you.
Discover what it takes to become a pilot at the National Air and Space Museum Stephen F. Udvar-Hase Center in Chantilly, Virginia. Join them for the 10th annual Become a Pilot Family Day and Aviation Display. See dozens of visiting aircraft on display for one day only. Enjoy hands-on activities, story times, and kite flying demonstrations. Saturday, June 14th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., sponsored by Booz Allen Hamilton. WTOP is a proud media sponsor. Visit airandspace.si.edu. For details.
Summertime is great, and Marvin Bond, editor of Recreation News, thinks so too. He has a couple ideas to help us celebrate.
Well, the big Blackbeard Pirate Festival invades Hampton, Virginia, May 31st to June 1st. This is a huge one, one of the largest in the country as far as pirate festivals are concerned. It takes place down in Hampton in the Tidewater area of Virginia, and there are more than 100 reenactors that create all kinds of havoc on the streets of downtown Hampton. You can find out more on page 48 of the May issue of Recreation News.
Now, to me, nothing screams summer like a good outdoor birding festival.
The Canaan Valley Birding Festival is June 5th to 8th. It takes place at Canaan Valley State Park. Enjoy half-day and full-day walks that take you looking for 125 species, including tropical warblers who actually fly to this very high valley in West Virginia to nest. Find out more about that on page 41 of May's Recreation News.
Marvin Bond is editor of Recreation News. I'm Nicole Ogursko, and summertime is great.
Prepare your agency for the next generation of cloud and cybersecurity at the 2014 Akamai Government Forum on June 5th in downtown D.C. Join agency leadership from across federal government as they delve into the latest issues affecting agencies today, such as FedRAMP, innovations in cybersecurity, ID management in the cloud, and the threat landscape. To register and learn more about this event, visit 2014akamaigovforum.com.
Federal News Radio's Mike Causey is on Twitter. Follow him at mcauseywfed for his latest columns covering federal pay, benefits, and retirement. At mcauseywfed.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and I'm talking with OPM Director Catherine Archuleta, who's given us some time today, and we really appreciate it. Director, the federal government for years has been trying to push the diversity program to make the federal government look more like their general population, and it would seem that in a time of sequestration and tight budgets, this is going to be very hard to do.
We're still hiring in the federal government. We're replacing people who are leaving, and I think there's really a commitment by not only this president and me, but the department heads to really make government reflect the nation's changing population. And I think this is a priority for them, but it certainly is a priority for me, one of my highest priorities. As we take a look at the federal workforce and how it can look like the America we serve, we need to be sure that we're reaching out as far and as wide as we possibly can. And over the course of the last 6 months, I've been working with a lot of different organizations to really help me do that. As I travel about the country, I've been spending time with national organizations and employee groups for their advice on how we can bring more individuals into the federal government, federal workforce that reflect, again, the people that we serve. I was just in San Francisco, and I met with the Asian American community there, and I also met with the Latino community, and then I went on to Denver and met with the Native American community. I believe that if I can talk to groups across the country, and that we use the tools we have, the technology we use, to bring out a matching effort through social media, that's a couple of the ways that we can do that. I also, not just thinking about how we bring in new employees, but take a look at our senior leadership and the president's priority around the senior executive service, I think offers us an opportunity to increase diversity there as well. So, for example, in the Latino community, I'm working with LULAC to assist in the training of our mid-level managers so that we can prepare these mid-level managers to serve in positions of more responsibility. I'm also, I'm visiting a lot of the minority-serving institutions to talk about opportunities in federal service. And doing that across the country, I've been to Brownsville and San Antonio, Denver, Atlanta, Miami. I'm off to Miami soon, Houston and Philadelphia. And I'll be reaching out to diverse communities on each of those visits.
I like that term you used about looking like the community we serve, the America we serve. That's an interesting way to put it. I know over the years, the Latina community has traditionally been underrepresented. At one point, it was every agency except the Justice Department. Do you know if those numbers have changed?
I don't know exactly, but I will say that we are the only underrepresented racial or ethnic group in federal employment. This is it's a challenge, certainly, Mike, but it's also an opportunity. I think it gives us an opportunity to work with the Hispanic leadership throughout the country, as well as our own Hispanic federal employees, to bring attention to this and to improve our numbers. So I'm focused on it, not only with the Latino community, but as I mentioned, to other diverse communities, so that we can, again, have our federal workers reflect the communities they serve.
I think that's something that would surprise a lot of people. I knew it, but that the Latino community is the only one that is underrepresented in all these. And in the past, it was because so much of the concentration was in the Southwest and Florida, and that's why you had many people with the Justice Department, Immigration and Naturalization. But as the Latino community has expanded all over the country, you would think that would change.
Oh, yes. I mean, every state has a Latino population. You know, obviously in the Southwest and in Florida, that tends to be larger numbers. But in my travels across the United States in this job and previous jobs, there wasn't a time that I couldn't meet with, you know, I couldn't find a group of Latinos that were there ready to meet with me. So it's very impressive in terms of the numbers. And also when you think about the talent that exists there as in other communities, I think it provides me the opportunity to work with those communities and to seek out the talent that we might recruit to federal service.
Well, that's good. As long as I've been around, it seems to me at least twice a year, somebody comes up with a survey of government morale, and invariably it's bad. And I keep wondering, I know this is a cottage industry to some extent, but do you think government morale is bad right now?
You know, I think it's hard for employees right now to hear so many things and to face the challenges that they've faced with sequestration and budget cuts and furloughs. But I make two distinctions. I think that if you've got to take a look at two very important factors that we've found within, or indicators that we found in the EVS. The first one is employee morale, and I will have to say that employee morale, because of the pressures, has certainly gone down. But when I take a look at the number of employee engagement, you and I have talked about this before, employee engagement is still strong. You know, the employees who are working for federal government believe in what they do. When I talk to young people about why they should come into federal government, I talk about the purpose of and the mission. We're a purpose-driven employer. We are there to help people, and I certainly feel that when I talk to employees, as I do all the time, and I ask them what keeps them in their jobs. They tell me because they think that they believe that they're making a difference. So employee morale, not good. Employee engagement, still running strong.
That says something about the government and about the people in it.
It talks all about the federal workforce and how, you know, they believe that what they're doing is making a difference and that they're helping people. And that's what sort of in the cool again category is, if you're looking for a job where you know you will be helping someone else, that you know that what you're going to do is going to make a difference in somebody's life. That's, you know, we're the employer who can provide that opportunity.
Time magazine once made fun of me. They had a little blurb about this parochial columnist in Washington because I made the point that the first man on the moon was a GS-14, and they found that wildly amusing, but it's true.
It is true.
Lots of interesting jobs in the government.
There is.
Hey, the question of the backlog. OPM has had a backlog in retirement applications for almost forever. Part of it is the process is a lot. It's largely a paper process. People have to eyeball these, and the documents have to be checked. How are you doing on that?
Well, this month I'm pleased to say that we've reduced once again the backlog on our retirements, and I want to be sure that we continue to do so. At the same time, as we've been doing that, We've also are implementing an IT modernization that will allow us to begin to process claims faster. We're also focused on customer service because I want to be sure that when someone does have a question about their retirement, that they have somebody who will answer the phone or answer the email. So I meet weekly with my director for retirement services. We talk about where he's at in terms of the inventory. We talk about where we're headed with the modernization piece, and fortunately, our budget was provided money both in 2014, and we have a request for 2015 that will allow us to do some case management changes, bring or modernize how we handle cases. In the meantime, we're focused as well on customer service.
Because this is largely now a paper operation, isn't it?
I think it used to be. You'd be surprised how much of the automation is. So if you're someone who comes on board right now, the way that we process your information is already all automated. And we've actually put up on available at least to view. We've scanned in about another large portion of it. So all told, about 85% of our records are viewable online. So sort of the notion that it's paper and pencil is I think, not quite accurate. And so what the modernization will do will be able to take these this information and put it into technology that will allow us to bring up all this information on every individual through computerized technology called case management.
I've seen over the years a lot of reporters come in and report on the government beat, and of course they concentrate on OPM because that's the place to be. It's not a household word outside of Washington. Most people in America don't know what it does, and these reporters were often ignorant of that. But after a time covering OPM, they said they were astounded by the breadth and the knowledge of people in OPM, how interesting they were, and it was not at all what they thought. And I know you have a lot of experience in government at the Labor Department and elsewhere. What do you think about the OPM crew?
You know what? I am thoroughly impressed with the OPM crew. You know, they're, again, a reflection of the federal workforce that is dedicated to their work. As I said, I make phone calls to my employees almost every week, and I hear about, you know, how from every job that with every job that I talk about with them, they're just, you know, they're dedicated to it. So
they're people, I guess.
Yeah, they are people, yeah. And they believe in customers. We're the customer service agency, right. So that touches every department in the government.
Director, thank you so much for being with us. And now you're going to change offices, and I think Lauren Larson and I are going to do the same, and we'll be with you on the web chat
okay.
coming up. Thank you.
I'll see you in the next room.
See you.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Bye.